My name is Cindy Masters. I'm an alcoholic. Because of the grace of God, some simple actions in this program, both sides of sponsorship, I've been sober since December the 17th, 1985, every single day in a row. I'm so grateful. I mean, that's all I got to say, really. I'm so grateful. It's like my being is vibrating with it, and it has most of this weekend. I don't plan for these things. I don't prepare. I can't. So this has to be a language of the heart for me, because I don't have the intellectual resources anymore to be able to retain things and organize. I cannot do it. So all you get from me is my heart, and hopefully it will be enough. It usually is, if God directs it. I did think a little bit when I was praying this morning about, you know, how did I want to start this? My life is so rich and full. It's so rich and full. It's beyond imagination. How did somebody like me get to have a life like this? And so before I backtrack, I want to tell you that the very, very best part of my life, and I have all kinds of successes out there, but the very, very, very best part of my life is you. And that's the only reason I have any of that. And if it goes away, I still have you. And it's gone away sober. I've had near-death experiences drinking, and I've had near-death experiences sober. I've got to see God through both lenses. How lucky am I? I use an iPad for my big book when I travel. Sometimes just to irritate people, but... but I use it because I sit in a lot of business meetings. It's hard to pull out a big book in the middle of a business meeting. But it's very easy to read prayer and meditation in the middle of a business meeting from an iPad. Because it's totally acceptable to have there. It's totally easy for me to go get recentered with those bookmarks. I'm so glad we don't have rules and regulations here. I'm so glad we don't. We don't. This is where, for me, I was thinking, what is step 10 and 11? Step 10 is a manifestation in my daily life of steps 4 through 9. In a nutshell, that's what step 10 is. It's also where I discovered the AA code. And the AA code is love and tolerance. And you will hear me say every time I talk that love's the answer, no matter what the question. And I believe that with all of my heart. And everything that I do with somebody that I sponsor is prefaced with love. And as long as it's prefaced with love, I can tell you about anything. But my heart has to be love, not my head. You know, my heart has to be love. And I really believe that at the end of the day, that's where the steps take me. Love and tolerance. It's when I can practice that in my day-to-day affairs, when somebody's driving 30 miles an hour in front of me on the highway, and my instinct is like, why are you doing this? I'm in a hurry. Is to think that could be my grandmother in that car. That's when love and tolerance begins to happen. As I begin to think differently, I begin to see the world differently. I don't do it perfectly. You know, I don't do it perfectly, but I want to. And what I found is in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how right or wrong I do anything, if I really want recovery, if I really want to do the best I can, it's enough. It's always enough. It doesn't have to be your enough. See, when I got here, the bar was very, very low. When I got here, I was like an animal. Now, most people don't come here like that, and I sponsor a lot of women that their bottom happened at their dining room table with two cars in the garage, and they are every bit as alcoholic as I am. But when I got here, that's not my story. When I got here the first time in 1980, I was 17 years old. Since I was 12 years old, I'd been in over 25 institutions. I'd lived on the streets. I'd hitchhiked all over the country. I'd given up every little piece of myself that I never even had to start with. There was nothing of me, and all I had was anger. When you read the promises, I thought, are you kidding me? I mean, really, they did not sound appealing to me. Oh, groovy, self-seeking's going to slip away. I can hardly wait. I did not work the steps the first time I came here because I was afraid to try. And that's the part I've got to have if I want to stay sober. I don't have to do them great. I don't have to do them the way you... I have to be willing to try. And I wasn't, because I thought I was so broken. I had bought into everything that the society had told me about myself, which became old ideas. And I was so broken that I thought that those steps couldn't work for me. And if I tried them, it would prove to the world that they had been right about me and that I should be discarded from this world. So I was too afraid to try, but I sure did like the way you loved me. I was profane. I dressed horribly. Nobody told me not to. They said, come back. I love you. Let me love you until you can love yourself. I'm so grateful for that, because I would have left. If you shamed me, I would have to go. But you didn't. You loved me. And I tried to do that for you. And I tried to example to you what I want you to be. I tried to example to you, and maybe it'll be attractive enough that it'll catch on. So I got drunk not working the steps. Bet you're surprised. I went to a lot of meetings. I came back and I worked the steps through step 9 to the best of my ability. And it was a shallow and hollow representation of how I work the steps today. But my, was it enough right then. And it lasted a couple years, and I made a 9-step amend, and this crazy thing happened. I got this, oh my gosh, it went south. Because it gave an opportunity for my ego to get reinjected in my life. I lived the highlight reel of AA. I read the big book and I memorized it. And I could outquote anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used it in a meeting like a weapon. You're wrong, sir. And by the way, that was not the intention of our forefathers in the original manuscript. By the way, do you know how those traditions came about? Do you know anything about the Washingtonians? I don't care if you've got 40 years sober, you don't understand how to do it right. I did what I heard in me. To see, I knew all the words and I knew nothing about how to live them. I knew nothing about how to let them be a part of my presence. You know, I began to learn transparency, but I knew nothing about authenticity. See, my goal today, if I'm doing 10, 11, and 12 decently, is that I will be authentic with you as well as transparent. And what authentic means for me is I'm really me. And I give you a window to see me. I give you a window to see my heart. You feel me. I don't have to tell you about me. You feel me because I am authentic. I don't have to tell you about you because you'll share with me because I am authentic. That is my dream. That is my biggest goal in my life today. Again, I know nowhere where I'm going with this. But I had this highlight reel, and what I took were little lines, little highlight reels, and I quote them, and I talk about them, and I do them, and, you know, and I tell you how to do them, and my God. And I end up getting drunk again. Because I've got to keep seeking. I've got to be different than I was last year. I've got to keep growing. The highlight reel worked for a couple years, but a highlight reel doesn't keep working. You know, I have to understand it differently today than I understood it last year, and I'm 31 years sober. Because the thing that I am commanded to do, and I will say commanded to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's three things. I am commanded to admit complete defeat. I am commanded to have a capacity to be honest, which for me is where the transparency and authenticity come in. It means that I'm my whole self everywhere. It means I'm not a certain self in AA and a certain self at work and a certain self at home. It means I am my whole self everywhere. That for me is honest. I dress the way I dress, even in a business meeting. I will look like this. Sometimes I dress better, sometimes I dress worse. But I dress here the same way. I can't do different, because it, for me, is in conflict with my value system. Now, that's not everybody's. My value system doesn't have to be yours. It's where I got with me. I can't feel like I'm pretending and fake up here, or I won't be able to connect with you. That's just me.
Just saying.
So when I got sober the first thing that I've been sober since 85, and the first thing my sponsor said, I wasn't allowed to quote the big book anymore. She said I could only paraphrase as it applied in my life. What does that mean? I had no idea how to put this thing on me. I had no idea how to talk about it in words that didn't use the exact words from the big book. I had no idea how to really put it on my everyday life, which is what 10 and 11 and 12 were about. It's about how does this become part of my natural vocabulary? How does this just become part of my being? How does it not get separated and compartmentalized? Because a far better example lies in my daily life, not what I do here. And if I don't talk about it everywhere and it doesn't become a part of my inner culture, then it becomes fragmented, and I've been fragmented my whole life. You know, I grew up in a way that I just, you know, I was just a very fragmented human being with a very fragmented life, and I can't do that sober. So my first 12 years sober were challenging. I'll tell you, I don't know if by the time Beth got sober, I was still in leather every day, either leather or boots and a cowboy hat. But they always told me that they would know I was getting better when I didn't have to do that. And see, the bar is low because I had to protect myself. It's all that I knew. I couldn't afford to be like I am now. If I would have been like I am now, you would have had the power to kill me, and God knew it. I couldn't afford to be wide open. I couldn't. I was so wounded. I was operating from a place of complete woundedness. And that's why you guys just loving me was so important, because it's the love that healed me. It's the love that gave me the courage to work the steps. It's the love that made me want to come back here. It's the love that makes me want to love you when you're not very lovable. You know? Because I know what's there. I know that if I love you long enough, that God will just reveal it. And you'll stop hiding it, trying to protect it. Because that's what we do. We drink, we drink, we drink. We feel ashamed. We feel horrible about our behavior. And then we have to drink because we woke up to the behavior. And then we create more behavior. And that's the way that this deal goes. And so undoing those layers took for me a lot of attempts at the steps. It took a lot of times. Most of those layers no longer exist. That's the miracle of recovery. I am a whole human being, and I am physically and mentally a very broken human being. But I am a whole human being. Now, sometimes my idea the first 15 years of doing 10, 11, and 12 was I got on my knees in the morning and got on my knees at night. And it was hollow, and it was shallow, and it was meaningless. I was legalistic. I was legalistic. I did what you said. I did it the way it was in the big book. I did it, I did it, I did it. It didn't make any room for a relationship with God. None. Because see, I had a vision of what I would look like as a spiritual person. I had a vision of what my relationship with God should look like if it were right. And guess what that didn't leave room for? God's vision. I was so attached to how it needed to work that I couldn't let God work. And see, the 11th step for me is not about, I do routine. The book clearly says we let God discipline us in this way because we are undisciplined people. I do the routine. But the routine is an opportunity for me to be able to be still enough to let God begin to share with me his vision for my life. And that's when it begins to change. That's when it begins to, like, be a waltz. You know? That's when you have the most romantic dance of your life. And it's the truth. And that's when, for me, the other dances in my life and romance began to have some depth and some meaning. I'm 31. I got married when I was 23, and up until then, I'd never been able to be in a relationship more than 2 years. I was a serial monogamist into long-term sobriety because I could not attach. I could not truly attach to another human being. I couldn't. I couldn't until I could. And I'm married to somebody that's known me since I was 14 and used to visit me in institutions and be afraid for me when I was on the street. And is the kindest human being that I've ever known in my life and teaches me to be a better human being. And because I've known that kindness my whole life, I could trust it. Because I wouldn't believe it if you just walked up to me now and were that kind. Because I'm cynical. I'm hardened. But now I'm more and more open. So miracles keep happening if I allow myself in the 11th step to make room for God's vision in my life and let it become different. I had totally given up on relationships. I knew I couldn't do them. I knew I could not hurt people. In long-term recovery, I harmed people in relationships. And it wasn't because I'm me, it's because I'm scared. It's because I can't really be authentic. It's because I use things like sex and as a way to avoid intimacy instead of a way to have it. We put sex on the shelf for a few years. We made a conscious decision. Now, once you get in menopause, that may happen for you anyway. But we lay in bed and at night, the last thing I do at night is hold hands and pray all the gratitudes for the day. And that's all. That's what we do. That's how we close our day. For 8 years, every day in a row, when I'm on the road, we do it on the phone. Now, that, for somebody like me, is a big deal. And you've heard it on this panel that gratitude always leaves me with God. Always. I never talk about my relationship, so I don't know where this is coming from either. But you know, it's the miracles that come when I let God determine my life. So this highlight reel, for my first 15 years, I was too... in the beginning, Oak Tree was my higher power. And Oak Tree was enough. Until the Oak Tree wasn't enough. Because at night when I was lonely, talking to the Oak Tree was hard. I still can't describe my God to you. My God does not belong to religion, but seems to belong to all of the religions. See, I took it very seriously when you said God as we understand him. And I took all of yours. And I took like all the best parts, and what I know is at the end of the day, love is the answer, and that somehow I feel God in loving you and you loving me. And I want to example that. In 1998, I was 12 years sober, and I had a great, well, I'll tell you, I'm going to go all the way back. You know, they said meditate. You've heard a lot of people talk about it. Well, I vibrated, man. And I smoked a lot. An omen, you know what I mean? And sitting on the top of some hill in my cowboy hat with boots, smoking. So this is again the highlight reel of the 11th step. It's like I gotta meditate. I wasn't reading all the words, but you know, I gotta meditate. So I bought a Harley Davidson. And it vibrated more than I did. And it was louder than the firing squad in my head. You know that one that says you're a piece of crap, you know you don't belong here, you're not good enough for AA, you're not good enough for anybody? It got louder than that, and you know what? I could hear God in the wind. So the reality is like with this meditation thing, All I got to do is want to do it. It doesn't matter how I do it. God will meet me where I am. I kept trying to meet God where you were with God. I kept trying to meet God in the way that you were doing it, and I didn't make any room to meet with God. And then that Harley Davidson, I found God. In 1998, I was 12 years sober. I'd gone through this walk in the dark, which many of us will experience sometime in our recovery. And it was lonely, and it was hard, and it was scary, and I didn't know if I wanted to live or not. But I kept seeking God. I couldn't feel God. I felt like God was mean. Some sad things that happened to people I loved, and I thought, God is mean, and I don't trust you. Which may be the loneliest place to be once you've had a spiritual experience. This went on for 6 months. So I got on my Harley Davidson February 1, 1998, and I got on Interstate 65, and I'm on it maybe 5 or 10 minutes. I'm doing about 65, 70 miles an hour to somebody else, and they come over in my lane, and they hit me. And I'm catapulted 17 foot in the air. And I come down on the hood of a car, and I roll off that car. And that car drives up me. And my lungs are collapsed. My heart shifted to the left. My face got shredded by the undercarriage of that car. I'm laying in the highway. I'm dying. I don't know that I'm dying. I'm scared. I can't breathe. When your lungs are collapsed, you can't breathe. And I'm so scared. More scared than I've ever known sober. And then I let go in a bigger way than I ever let go. And I like to share this because this is my spiritual experience that's with love. Because when I let go, what happened for me was I got wrapped in white, billowy clouds of love. Nothing but love. I'm so not afraid to die. I'm so not afraid of God. God held me. These scars on my cheek represent my kiss from God. How lucky am I? Now, that didn't come out unscathed. I have a traumatic brain injury. I have a spinal cord injury. I had about all the things wrong with me. Beth remembers. I wouldn't bother to tell all my story if there weren't a million people that remember. Because my sober story is crazier than most people's drunk story. And honestly, it's the best thing that ever could have happened to me. And part of the reason that's the best thing that ever could have happened to me is because it opened me up in a way that I'd never been opened up. I stayed guarded for those first 12 years of sobriety. There was still this filter between me and you and God. I couldn't discard it. I couldn't. I tried. God discarded it. I didn't believe you loved me. I didn't. I thought you loved me because you had to. I was one of those jerks in AA when I got sober. I mean, I was that person that when they came to me, they're like, oh God, she's here. You know, I'm not kidding. I stood up in meetings and resigned from Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's like, they said, don't let the door hit you. I had no defense against God after the wreck, and I had no defense against you. I laid in a hospital. I had nothing to give you. I've been speaking in conferences since I was 4 years sober. So at that time, I've been speaking at conferences already for 8 years. And I thought, because I talked good, maybe you loved me. And I thought, because I could help you, maybe you loved me. And I thought, because you had to, maybe you loved me. And when I had this wreck, people came and came and came and came and came and came. The hospital had to make all these new regulations even for the waiting room. They wanted to know who I was. You know, I must be some kind of a star. I'm crazy because that's what happens to me with a brain injury and add a little medication. And you'd walk in and I would throw you out and then I'd be calling you crying, why weren't you there? But the thing that did for me was it let me, for the first time in my life, feel unconditional love. And I felt it completely and absolutely. And it took until I was 12 years sober. I came in pretty callous. And I stayed and I kept trying. And because I kept trying, I ended up with this magnificent opportunity. The other thing that I did was I didn't tell God it wasn't allowed to be an opportunity. I didn't tell God this hurts too much, I've lost too much, I've lost my looks, I've lost my business, I've lost my mental capacity. This is not an opportunity, this is a punishment. I didn't do that. You brought me new girls. And they would feel sorry for themselves. And those of you that heard my talk hear this, but it's like, you know, they would feel sorry for themselves. And why isn't my boyfriend left? I'd have a seizure. She'd instantly feel better. Now, I can't remember her name. But what I know is that when people come to my house, they feel sad. And when they leave my house, they feel better. I have no hope to ever work again. I'm on Social Security disability fast-tracked. I'm on food stamps. My face, I look like this. I've had 22 surgeries reconstructing my face. But here's what happened. I got to be spiritually useful. And I didn't turn God away. I let it be enough. Because if I can be useful, my life has purpose and meaning. If I can somehow touch you and your heart in any way, my life has purpose and meaning. How lucky am I? And I'll tell you a whole bunch of other things happened. I had 6 crazy years. I fell, broke my neck, paralyzed, had cancer, went through a year of chemo radiation, had long odds to make it through that. I've had a lot of things. I'm hardware from the neck to the bottom. Holy crap, you know? And somehow you all let me be of service throughout that. And when you get to be of service, everything's possible. I've had to learn to walk again 3 times. I was paralyzed from the chest down, spent 3 months in the hospital, and nobody expected me to move again. I didn't know if I wanted to. Look at me. Look at God's work. My sponsor tells me to show God off. I'm not showing me off. I'm not even showing this book off. Because this book sometimes, and I believe in it heart and soul, but this book and my memorization and legalism of it kept me from being close to God. Because I didn't experience it, I touted it. I've got to have the spiritual experience. This teaches me a pathway that can let that happen if I don't get stuck in the pathway so hard I don't let the experience happen. I'm going to kind of get current. The 10th step has been really challenging for me. It's kind of like whack-a-mole. First, I had to learn how to do it in AA. AA was actually my worst place. It was my worst place because it was my safest place. So I was really judgmental in AA. I was very self-righteous in AA. I had a better way than you. I had the only way. I judged the heck out of you. You come late to a meeting. You know. It's part of why I do this tablet, because I would have been so mad at somebody having a tablet. So I have a tablet. And it's to remind me. It's to remind me that it's the words, if they're pasted on my bathroom door, it's good enough. You know? So, at AA, I got better. It's still the place where I have so much intimacy, and anytime I have intimacy, when I get afraid, I step back from it. When my back got broke, and I got broke being kicked through doors as a kid, and I had to go through this whole amends process and forgiveness process to get cool. But somebody that ended up being my sponsor came over, and anytime I'm medicated, by the way, I'm crazy. Beth knows. Beth knows. And the reason why I've never abused any medication is I've never handled any myself, ever. And I've never forgotten, did I take it or not? And I've never, ever had a desire to go use more than that was prescribed. I've not been my business. I have gone off before where I was supposed to. And that's not always good either. But my sponsor came over and is like, the 11th step, and where it says, God, please direct my thinking. especially remove self-pity. He said, there's a reason why self-pity is number one. Because we all have a propensity for it. See, it's to normalize it and then to disregard it. It's also, you know, it's kind of cool because in the 11th step is, the 10th step is the first time I'm told that I have power. In the 10th step, I'm told I have power and that this is the proper use of will. And that's to do this evaluation throughout the day. And then in the 11th step, it's the first time I'm told to think. Because until I'm armed with all the tools, I got no business thinking. Until I know how to pray, I shouldn't think. But then it tells me to think about the day ahead. And it tells me to first ask God to remove these things that we're all subject to from my thinking. Self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking. So I'll just tell you about this last year. It's been really hard for the 10th step, like at work. It's actually, let's say, the last six. And see, I'm in a business. I own two businesses. Isn't that crazy? I can't do anything they do. And I didn't have any money when I started them. I had $1,700 to my name, not to start a business. And I have two really successful businesses. Because going about God's business, somehow it takes care of mine. And if they go away, my identity and my value is not in those businesses. My identity and my value is in being of service somehow. Thank God everything got stripped from me at 12 years sober. Because I don't have to be afraid of what happens if it gets stripped from you. I know, it's not that bad. Matter of fact, it gets real at that point. I'm sorry for being all over the map today. So at work, I have a brain injury. And I cause myself a lot of problems pushing my brain farther than it'll go. I have things that look like strokes that are hemiplegic migraines that happen in less than 1% of the population of people that have migraines. And I've been in stroke ICU units with it. I push my brain as far as a person can push their brain. Most of my filters are artificial. You know where it says pause when agitated or doubtful? There's not a pause button in here. Okay? And so I have to put all these artificial things. So one of the things that happened with this brain injury was I got to be a newcomer again because I was reactive. I don't have any impulse control. I can't do it. But you guys have all the tools for somebody that's reactive and has no impulse control because no newcomer has it. We just don't. And so all I had to do is the things that you taught me, but my filters are artificial. And if I don't get sleep, and I don't have sleep right now, I've gone out too many times in a row, but my filters are artificial. So everything has to, I have to get sleep, and I have to pray in the morning, and I have to put these things in place so I'm not an idiot. And at work, I have the delusion of being in charge. You know, like all these people, I'm responsible for all these lives and, you know, all my clients, like if I screw up and it's like, oh, you know. And so when I have an illusion of being in control or in charge or responsible for the world, I get afraid. And I try to manage. And when I try to manage, I react. So the barometer for me is if I'm being reactive, I got a problem. And I got to go back. So my sponsor and I mean, I pray. I didn't just pray. I beg God. I beg God every day. Please let me not hurt one of these people that work for me. Please let me not do that today. Please let me not lash out because they didn't do it perfect. Please let me not be afraid at work. Please, please, please. Beg. Doesn't mean it gets removed. It's like what they talk about 6 and 7. It just like kept happening. I hated myself. I hate because who wants to hurt people sober? Who wants to do that? But I kept trying, and I kept, you know, I did it again. I mean, I'm 20-some years sober. I don't belong, and I shouldn't work. I should go back on disability. It's not fair to the whole rest of the world. Do you owe somebody an apology? Yes.
Well, you're telling another person, ask God to forgive you. Don't make your apology. Well, people got tired of hearing the same apology. And I could not change my behavior. But enough practice, you know what happened? All of a sudden, I went 3 months, and I had not reacted. I had not done that. I had not lashed out. Because I just kept doing that dumb thing. Oh, I'm sorry. I was wrong. One of my boys once said, you know, you say this a couple times a week. I was not, you know, that's where I have to be scared about, like, attaching myself to a vision of what a person looks like a certain number of years sober. Because I'll die. I'll kill myself or I'll drink. I just have to be willing to grow towards being a person God wants me to be. I did not have control, you guys. But I had responsibility. My brain injury is not an excuse to hurt people. It's not an excuse to lash out. There's no excuse to hurt people. There's just not. Not for me. But eventually, 3 months went by and I hadn't done it. I was so happy. I'm like, guess what? I've not done it for 3 months. Oh my God, God's fixed me. Guess what happened next week? I call my sponsor. I'm sobbing. I'm like, how does this go away? I mean, what can I do? I'm doing everything I know to do. It's like I can't live like this. My sponsor said, maybe God wanted you to know you still need Him. And it was such a relief to me. So maybe when something gets screwed up in my life, it is a reminder that I am. My only way I get through these things is a total reliance on God. Now, I have not reacted like that in probably a year and a half or 2 years. And it took a lot of practice. Because the bigger my business got, the more pressure I felt. You know, we start doing international business, and it's like, I mean, like, really, like, how does somebody like me belong in that, you know? And it just came out all over. And so as soon as you get one thing, it gets better. Then it comes up differently. I hired this senior vice president. What's a senior vice president? She want my job. And she tried to bully me. That's not smart. And and my sponsor, so the first thing she would tell me, she'd be like, you're to be a service everywhere. You march in that bathroom. The minute that happens, you march in that bathroom and you pray to be of service. Don't pray about how it's going to look. You just pray to be of service. And then we got working further. And she said, you know, Cindy, every time that something like that's going to happen, I wasn't reacting. I was just putting her in her place in a very calm way. Which was kind of mean. And my sponsor says, you know, you get this vibration inside. Everybody knows when that's going to happen inside of them. And we override it. And that's where the pause has to come in. And that's the time to go to the bathroom and pray. Now, I had to talk to her about every day. And eventually, this lady and I didn't work together. But it happened in the nicest, loving, most kind way. Instead of it being this brutal battlefield, which is what I know when there's conflict. And so that's where 10 manifests in my life. Now, I'll tell you, my home life, honestly, there's no conflict. I'm now it'll be this week because I'm saying this, but I really want to give more than I want to give. I really have the ability today to care about somebody else's needs a little bit more than mine. And when you live with somebody that's the same way, wow. And in AA, it's not very often because I'm no longer attached to it being my way. I'm no longer attached to policing AA. I'm attached to loving you. I'm attached to being an example to you. I'm attached to helping you. I'm attached to being loved by you. You can put a period on the end of that. It's a freedom.
and I'm in the steps. And I have a big book meeting in my house every week. I think I may take the tapes from this and this year, like go through the tapes from this in my meeting. You know, I think it could be kind of a cool, and it's still the book, it's still the steps. You see what I mean? Because everybody gets to hear it a little different. And the way that I stay disciplined with step 11 right now is, again, I need artificial filters. Maybe more of us do that even don't have a brain injury. So I have sponsored a girl for the most part of 15 years. And she got an impulsive relationship with somebody that apparently was an alcoholic and got sober a month after they got married. And she didn't ask my permission about any of it, but they moved to Nigeria. There's no Alcoholics Anonymous in Nigeria. None. No GSO listing, nothing. So she moved there. She's like, what have I done? I'm like, well, apparently God wants you isolated so you can sit still and develop a relationship. And so what we've done, and it works so well for me, is every day, first of all, they've taken Alcoholics Anonymous to Nigeria. They go to the hospitals. It's like Bill and Bob. And very few people stay sober. And very few women. She cannot walk outside of the house without her husband safely. She's a white woman in Nigeria, and she will get killed. So she is, her life has gotten so small, which is hard for us independent women in AA. So her reliance on God is greater than ever. We can't afford to talk often, but we talk every Sunday. Today we're moving it a little because I'm here and speaking right now. So she'll call me about 12:30. And she, but every single day, because she was just, I mean, it was just so painful for her. So I said, well, every day, read the daily reflection, do 86 through 88, and write me your experience that you have with it. So every day I do my own, and then I read hers. And then she writes hers, and I write mine. And I have to do it, because otherwise I'm asking her to do something I'm unwilling to do. So every morning I'm reading all this and I'm writing about it and I'm sharing with another human being because her discipline forces me to be disciplined. And then I have another gal who 10-steps me every night. Try not to twitch, but she does it on an app. And and she sends me her 10-step because she's really struggling with her daily thing and her daily routine, because every time somebody gets off kilter for me, the first thing I ask them is, what's your morning look like and what's your night look like? Because if the bookends of my day stay structured and disciplined, God takes care of the rest. We can work through all of the rest. And so what a beautiful, it's changed my world. See, I can't give without getting. It's quite impossible. And so it's at first it felt hard. Like, oh gosh, because I run two businesses. I don't just own one now, I own two. I speak, I sponsor, I have a relationship, I have a home. You know, I sit on nonprofit boards, I'm involved in the community, I do speaking engagements for the community at home. I'm, you know, it's like it's crazy the things that I get to do. But this is the most important thing, and that's why I get to do those things. So letting her discipline me like that. See, letting her discipline me like that, not me disciplining her, has changed my life. I believe that I am right at 10 o'clock. I thank you very much for giving me a life that's worth living and letting me have this life.